Case number 15-1443 et al., International Longshore and Warehouse Union et al., petitioners versus the National Labor Relations Board, Ms. Maglio for the petitioners, Mr. Lauro for the respondent, Mr. Garone for the intervener, ICTSI Oregon, Inc.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Emily Maglio. I'm here on behalf of petitioners, ILWU. The board's theory in this case depends entirely upon its finding in the first case that the ILWU's claim to the dockside reefer work is secondary. It's our position that the work is primary, and for that reason, this case must similarly be vacated. However, there are also other legal deficiencies in the board's decision, primarily whether the board had substantial evidence to determine that the ILWU maintained a continued objective in this later period of pressuring ICTSI to assign the dockside reefer work to longshoremen. This later period is several months after the incidents that took place in the first case. They were in May and June of 2012. This period began in September of 2012.
But do you think it's irrelevant to look at the evidence of what happened before in examining what was happening at the later time?
No, we do not believe it's irrelevant. Rather, we believe under established law that the board must also have substantial and independent evidence from the latter period in order to establish a continuing objective.
Right. So the judge, the trial judge, the administrative law judge, found such evidence in terms of how the work was being performed in the latter period, and then looked at everything in the broader context. And our standard of review on something factual like that is especially deferential. So how do we get out of that box?
I think it's important to look at what the actual pieces of evidence are mm-hmm. that the ALJ relied upon to make this determination. And in addition to the evidence from the first case, the ALJ primarily relied upon statements and different conclusions that were drawn relating to the preliminary injunction that was issued in July of 2012. Mm-hmm. First, the ALJ
What about the slowdown of work, though?
Yeah, well, the last piece is a statistical analysis.
Right.
And so if we take out the statements that we believe, as we argued in our briefs, are unlawful to draw the inferences that were drawn, all that we have is a factual finding, which we do not dispute, that a decline in labor productivity stemming from the June 2012 labor dispute provides the most probable explanation for the decline in productivity. That does not establish what the union's objective is. Rather, all it establishes is effect. And I believe this court's decision in United Scenic Artists really gets at the heart of the difference between object and effect and the necessity for there to be separate evidence establishing the union's
Well,
object.
Oftentimes the best evidence of someone's intent is the effect. And when you then take the effect, it's not conclusive, so I take your point on that, but then you take the effects and look at the whole picture here, and the judge concluded that the object was evident enough of what was going on in the latter period.
Well, the judge looked at the effect, but he also looked at the findings that were contrary to the district court about whether the union notified its members of the preliminary injunction, the content of the union's notice instructing its members to comply with those injunctions, and a press release. And those were the only pieces of evidence that tie to any sort of statement by the union concerning that could feasibly relate to the reefer work. What we have in the statistical analysis is rather a conclusion that, you know, the board decision in International Typographical Union gets at, that it may be the case that the ILWU's claim to the reefer work in May and June 2012 and the disputes that arose from gave rise to a chain of circumstances that led to the later decline in productivity, but that does not establish sufficient evidence of the union's object. You need to have something else, and it's our position that that something else is not there. Um, I believe I was reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay.
In this circuit, I ever go find the bench does not respect the reservation. I'm not kidding. If you were in the Ninth Circuit and you got the 5 minutes, your red light would come on when you had 5 minutes to go. Right. Here, your red light's not going to come on until the whole 15.
Oh, okay. Thank
because
you.
Because I made a lot of living arguing in the Fourth Circuit, but it's the Ninth Circuit way. It came as a shock to me the first time I was there.
I think it's important to really look at the language of this court's decision in that United Scenic Artists case to get at whether there was evidence just based on the statistical analysis alone that shows a specific intent to involve neutrals, that focuses on purpose, intent, object, and not merely the effects of an action, and that is in this later time period, because the liability, the object that needs to be manifested, is not an object from several months before the liability period of this case. The evidence that must be in the record is substantial and independent evidence that the ILWU was pressuring ICTSI to assign the reefer work to Longshoremen from September 2012 through to June 2013. And it's important also to take into account the fact that after the district court entered its injunction, not only did productivity increase significantly, and even the statistician himself admitted that that was due to some compliance with the injunction, but it also was the end of any type of job action that looked remotely like the job actions that took place in June 2012. This is not a case where the job actions are a mirror of each other. Rather, every action that took place in June 2012 was directly tied to the assignment of the reefer work. For example, in June 2012, longshoremen self-assigned the reefer work to themselves. They performed the work themselves. And every piece is like that. Whereas here, what do we have? We have generalized and modest decline in productivity. There's no statements about reefer work. There's no action that has any direct and apparent connection to the reefer work. And under those facts, it's the union's position that much more is required to demonstrate that the union maintained an object in its actions in this later period to pressure ICTSI to assign the work to longshoremen. If you have no further questions, I will.
Thank you, Your Honors. In the second case, in the second period, the board had ample substantial evidence in which to find that ILWU continued its unlawful secondary activities, slowdowns and other conduct, for an unlawful secondary purpose, and either encouraged or at a minimum knew this was happening and condoned it. And that's sufficient to find a violation. I think that it's important to note that when the board assesses all the facts to determine the secondary object or not, it may look at both direct and circumstantial evidence. As Your Honors have noted, it may look at the effect of the conduct.
If all we had was the expert analysis, would that be enough? If we had no suggestion that anything, that there was any evidence of any overt statements or actions, but all we had was the statistical evidence,
right.
would that be enough for us to sustain the decision?
To make sure I understand Your Honor's hypothetical, yeah. If we put aside the direct evidence, including Mr. Bitz's admission that he encouraged that, and if we put aside the explicit threats and slowdowns from the first period and how the ones we have here closely on the heels of that mimic what happened before, if we put all that aside and just that Dr. Ward's statistical regressions analysis, it would still be strong evidence. As he noted, the productivity of every crane and nearly every crane operator remains significantly depressed, both statistically and economically, in the second period, which would be a remarkable coincidence if it weren't for the other evidence of
the
potential slogan.
You have a coincidence, you have to have other evidence. We just can't.
I guess what I should say is, fortunately, we have so much other evidence here.
Right, you don't need to answer that, although actually you do because Judge Griffith asked it. But you know, we don't have to answer it, I suppose, in the case because there's.
And we do have other evidence.
Yeah.
Or the board had other evidence.
Yeah.
But I want to give the statistical evidence the appreciation it deserves. No one's doubting this gentleman's credentials and that he found a statistically significant drop-off across the board, all the cranes and most of the crane operators, in the second period. But I acknowledge this is especially strong in light of everything else.
So even assuming the statistical evidence alone, to Judge Griffith's point or question, might not be enough, the overall evidence is enough in your view?
It's not an issue the board had to address here. Yeah. I mean, I can give you my opinion. The statistical evidence alone is pretty compelling, but fortunately what we have here is the whole constellation of evidence we've discussed. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to belabor it because I think, you know, you can read the brief, you can read the decision, you can see that evidence. We have admissions from union agents encouraging this activity. We have the explicit threats and slowdowns are orchestrated in the first period. We have a continuation of it. You can debate whether it's the mirror image, but it's certainly a sibling or a cousin. It's very similar. More slowdowns, more safety gimmicks. And again, with the when you add that to the admissions and the statistical analysis, the remarkable coincidence of everyone's productivity being down, it adds up to substantial evidence for the board to reasonably infer the continuation of an unlawful object, as well as the union's responsibility for the continuation of this conduct in the second period. And if your honors have any additional questions about whether that totality of evidence constitutes substantial evidence, I'm happy to answer that. If not, I thank the court for its time.
Okay, thank you very much.
May it please the court, Michael Garone for ICTSI Oregon. The ILWU's attacks on the board's decision in this case is at bottom an attack on the board's factual findings and credibility determinations. And as the court is obviously aware, this case is judged on a substantial evidence standard.
That was the gist of my question to your friend at the other table a while ago. And our standard of review here is pretty important.
And Your Honor, I think it's even more important because the argument that ILWU counsel makes really focuses on the object of the conduct in the second period. An object is another word of saying intent. And if there's anything that's a intensively factual issue, it's intent. And also with regards to intent, very often there is no smoking gun or admission in a case about intent, and you have to infer intent from circumstantial and other evidence. And I would join with what Mr. Laura said. I think there's abundant evidence in the record other than the statistical analysis that shows that the ILWU is still concerned about the reefer dispute even in the second period of time. The ILWU admits here that their actions in June of 2012 through August of 2012 were for the purpose of obtaining the reefer work. And what they're having, what they're trying to get the court to believe is that somehow in September, the next month, they no longer were concerned about the reefer work. And I don't think that's an inference that could be drawn from this record. In fact, all of their efforts to defend the slowdowns show that they were, still doing the same type of conduct and the similarity of the conduct. You know, in the first period, Judge Schmidt noticed that or noted in his findings that the truck drivers would drive the long way around the container yard, would take their time and drive exceedingly slow, that the crane operators would drive slow. In the second period, we have the same conduct, the same thing, the truck drivers driving slowly around the container yard, the crane operators driving in a slow manner. So we have the same conduct. The idea that somehow they no longer cared about this dispute after August is just ridiculous. I mean, if you look at JA 797, which was a release that the ILWU put out on January 3rd, 2013, within the second time period, they said that that ICTSI's position regarding the reefer work was an attack on the collective bargaining on the entire West Coast, was an attack on the ILWU as a union itself. That kind of overheated language, I think, can be used to show that there was still a lot of concern on the ILWU's part about the reefer work. And then if you look at Mr. Bitz, who was found incredible in a lot of particulars by the ALJ, but he even admitted that he would have allowed a certain procedure that he claimed was unsafe if ICTSI would drop the complaints against the crane operators for driving slowly. So on the one hand, he's saying something's unsafe, but then he says if you drop these slowdown complaints, I'll allow the, quote, unsafe condition to go forward. So there's abundant evidence in this record that the union was still smarting over this reefer dispute, was still concerned about the reefer dispute, and was still trying to hurt ICTSI and coerce ICTSI and the carriers who get affected by slowdowns themselves to try to induce the port or convince the port to release the reefer work to the ILWU members. As far as some of the arguments made by counsel, she says that the expert witness testified that it was because of the injunction that productivity increased somewhat. A couple of things. Number one, productivity never came back to normal. And number two, the testimony of the
I don't think she said it came back to normal. It improved. Improved, yeah.
Right. But if you read the testimony of the expert, I believe his testimony was that the productivity may have improved because ICTSI was taking steps to bring or attempt to bring disciplinary action against some of the crane operators for engaging in the slowdowns. And the theory was that some of these crane operators may have sped up a little bit because of that. But when you look at the entire issue here, nearly every crane operator, and there were many crane operators at this facility, nearly every one of them was slowing down and working below their capabilities during this time period. And I think that's very strong evidence. And unless there's any other questions from the court, I'll waive my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to start with the example that Mr. Garone just provided. Longshoremen being cited and the citations, the increase in citations being a product of the June 2012 labor dispute. This really highlights the issue with relying on just causation to establish object. So June 2012 labor dispute happens. Shortly thereafter, ICTSI starts increased surveillance and increased issuance of complaints. And then there is a response by longshoremen to this increase of complaints. The response to the increase of complaints does not manifest a object by the union to pressure ICTSI to assign the reefer work to longshoremen. Rather, it manifests an opposition to the complaints, an opposition to the surveillance. These are all issues that have no bearing on the reefer dispute, even though they may and likely were ultimately caused by the reefer dispute in June of 2012. And I think there's ample evidence of this sort of changes that happened as a result of the labor dispute that likely would not have happened if not for the labor dispute, which caused this kind of reaction. And further, there is also ample evidence in the record of changes in practices, which I believe ICTSI implemented in order to, in an effort to increase productivity, but which had the opposite effect. So for example, July of 2012, ICTSI removed all the stop signs from the container yard and replaced them with yield signs. However, because of the containers are stacked and high, when a truck driver would get to an intersection, now they can no longer rely that someone at the other side would stop, so they'd have to drive more slowly to make sure they could avoid an accident. And the record is full of these sorts of changes that took place as a result of the labor dispute, but which really emphasize why the object of the union in opposing those changes or in responding to a safety hazard that was created, it does not show that that union was pressuring ICTSI to assign the reefer work to longshoremen during that time period. And I think it's also really important to parse out this the difference here between, yes, the ILWU, as was argued in the first case, believes that the decisions were wrong and has been and continues to appeal the decisions that they believe are wrong. However, believing that a decision is wrong and taking action to remedy that that error in legal proceedings does not mean that the object of getting a decline in productivity relating to a response to increased surveillance and complaints, that those that decline in productivity itself had an object of pressuring ICTSI to assign the reefer work to longshoremen. And you know, and largely that is all the evidence that the board has for its conclusion that there was this ongoing object. Now, I think it's also important to really focus here on the decision. The decision here, and this is at pages Joint Appendix 1848-49, has two pages that are devoted to the evidence from which the board inferred that there was a continuing object in this latter period. Most of that evidence is the whether or not the union notified its members of the injunction, whether the union's statements and direction to comply with the injunction, but which also included statements of the union's intention to appeal, constituted some sort of, I'm not even sure precisely what their theory is on that, but the content of that memo and then the content of a press release. That is the core piece of information from which the board inferred an object in addition to the statistical analysis. The attorney for the labor board indicated that there was some evidence of ratification or condonement because the union knew this was going on and did nothing to stop it. And I think that gets at what is probably the core of our argument concerning the board's failure to defer to the arbitration awards. If you look at the arbitration awards as they are laid out in our decision, throughout this time period, until very close to the end, the ILWU was found that its members were not engaging in a deliberate slowdown. This is drastically different from the cases upon which the board relies, where there were incidents of harassment and violence that the union turned a blind eye to, or the union would walk by a machine and then a union official would walk by a machine and then suddenly that machine would stop working. This is a drastically different situation because throughout the time period, the union had no reason to believe there was a deliberate slowdown going on. And finally, I think just going back to the injunction-related matters, the board order at footnote 26 concedes that it is the district court that decides whether or not there's been compliance with its orders. And despite that finding, in an order that was after the ALJ decision but before the board's decision, the board completely disregarded the district court's finding that the union notified its members and instructed them to comply with the order. Thank you, Your Honor.
Great. Thank you very much. The case is submitted.